like a broke down engine, an empty cup, a dying city, a losing team. I need another dream. Never been anywhere.
From Los Angeles, California, that's the total blues man, James Armstrong, with Another Dream. It's from his 2012 album, Got It Going On. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a program that takes our exercise of media literacy to a very interesting level. This weekend was for me almost a paralyzing weekend because the emotions ran the full spectrum about what was happening and what has been happening and how people have been capitalizing on incredible tragedies, being a political season, which of course brings me to Hillary Clinton. She had tried to use the September 20th police killing of 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott in Charlotte, North Carolina, as a campaign photo op and backdrop for her proposals for what she called end-to-end reforms. But Mayor Jennifer Roberts asked both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, Clinton's main opponent in the presidential race, to hold off on plans to visit Charlotte so as not to further inflame tense reactions to Scott's death. But Clinton found a way. She waited for what she thought was an appropriate amount of time, and on Sunday was in Charlotte and commiserated for about 20 minutes with the flock at Little Rock AME Zion Church. I guess kind of a hint of home at Little Rock, Arkansas. She was telling the people there everything they already knew about racism in America. And then she told them how she, as opposed to anybody else, can fix it. So I thought we would listen to this speech today, because here is what classic neoliberalism sounds like. Here is what condescension sounds like. This is what the Clintons have been able to do. Find some degree, a very large degree, of sympathy and support from a community that clearly is in pain. Of course, I have a problem with this. And the problem I have with this is a problem I've been talking about black ministers having their services, their sacred hour, their sacred time, when people should be left alone to engage their spiritual side. But they open their churches during a service. It drives me nuts. I just don't get it. As if the service is specifically organized so that somebody can kind of drop in and talk a bunch of crap. It drives me crazy. Not even in your church on a Sunday do you find respite because your pastor is a toady. He has decided that it is okay. Come on in and do whatever you want during my service and the service of all these people who come to our church regularly. And I just want to give you the backdrop here. The whole idea was, of course, to make a public appearance in the middle of a major tragedy. Don't forget, you know, this killing sparked protest, and the whole community is in an uproar. And this is precisely what these folks like to do. Running for office, they like the idea that in the midst of all of this, they're going to stage a news conference and everything, including the killing of a man, is a backdrop to their news conference. So this is what she did. And it's a habit. It's a habit. And the only place, she didn't go to a neutral place like a local community center. She's not going into the community. She's going where it's safe, in a church. They always go to, like, as if black people, all the black people that you want to talk to, you can find them in this church. Of course, this is organized also for the convenience of the media, who have generally no interest in going to the black community. They're so terrified of it. So a nice, safe environment is selected both for Clinton and for the cadre of media people who are going to show up to cover this as news. It isn't news. But everybody is picking a side because, you know, they've decided where their interests lie. So we have, in the 2 weeks after this killing of Keith Lamont Scott, Clinton shows up, typical of her to show up at a black church, and she proceeds to tell people what they already know. And it is regarded as brand new information, and she is conveying to them she's got the answer. So let's listen to as much as we could stand. Please bear with me. This is very important. But what, as you listen, I want you to listen really hard, because this is what we put up with as African Americans all the time. This attitude, a condescension that makes you just want to grab the person by the throat and shake him up a little bit, saying, where have you not evolved at all in the last 50 years or so? This is what Hillary Clinton said to this community, and she's telling them that they are in pain.
I wouldn't be able to stand it if my grandchildren had to be scared and worried the way too many children across our country feel right now. But because my grandchildren are white, because they are the grandchildren of a former president and secretary of state, let's be honest here, they won't face the kind of fear that we heard from the young children testifying before the city council. You know, every child deserves the same sense of security. Every child deserves the same hope. They should not be facing fear. They should be learning and growing, imagining who they can be and what their contributions to our country could be as well. We've got to take action. We've got to start now, not tomorrow, not next year, now. We know we can't solve all these problems overnight, which means we don't have a moment to lose. Proverbs tells us, where there is no vision, the people perish. So let's hold on to a common vision. Let's come together to make America a place where every child, no matter who they are, where they're born, or what they look like, has the chance to live up to their God-given potential. Being stronger together with this common vision means rejecting those forces that try to pit us against each other. We can acknowledge that implicit bias still exists, not just in police departments, but throughout our country, without vilifying police officers. We can call for reforms to policing while still appreciating the many courageous and admirable officers out there who are doing their jobs with honor and integrity. I think about an officer named Montrell Jackson. You might not have heard of him, but I want you to. He was one of the officers murdered in Baton Rouge. A few days before he died, he wrote on Facebook, "He was black, but he wore blue." In uniform, he wrote, "I get nasty, hateful looks. Out of uniform, some consider me a threat. These are trying times. Please don't let hate infect your heart." And then he closed by saying that if anyone saw him on patrol and wanted a hug, "I gotcha." Montrell Jackson knew that making our communities safer and juster are not conflicting ideas. And most officers will tell you they can't do one without the other. I believe we need end-to-end reform in our criminal justice system, not half measures, but full measures, with real follow-through. In America, everyone should be respected by the law and have respect for the law. And that starts with being honest, being unafraid to face the facts. Face the fact that black men are far more likely to be stopped, searched by police, charged with crimes, and sentenced to longer prison terms than white men for doing the same thing. We need to fix a system where too many black parents are taken from their kids and imprisoned for minor offenses. We need to make sure our police officers are trained in de-escalating tense situations. We need to dismantle the so-called school-to-prison pipeline and instead invest in education from early childhood through high school into higher education. And yes, we have got to fight for common sense reforms to stop the epidemic of gun violence in our communities. Gun violence is by far the leading cause of death for young black men, more than the next 9 causes combined. We've got to make sure there are good jobs and quality affordable housing in every zip code in America. We need to make investments in communities that have been left out and left behind. I am a strong supporter of Congressman Jim Clyburn's plan to put 10% of our federal funds into 20% of the communities that have had generational poverty for 30 years or more. Now, there are some out there who see this as a moment to fan the flames of resentment and division. who want to exploit people's fears, even though it means tearing our nation even further apart. They say that all of our problems would be solved simply by more law and order, as if the systemic racism plaguing our country doesn't exist. Now, of course we need safe neighborhoods. No one is against that. Of course we need communities that are freed from the epidemic of gun violence. Of course we need that. But we also need justice and dignity and equality. And we can have both. This is not an either-or question for America. I want us to commit ourselves to this common vision. That is why I will build on the work that President Obama has done. And I will be sure that this is not just about a campaign or an election. This is much bigger than an election. These are issues I've been fighting for since I was a young lawyer working for the Children's Defense Fund, going to South Carolina to try to get young teenagers, 13, 14 years old, out of jails with adult offenders. I care deeply about this because it's not just personal to so many of us. It's about the kind of country we want to be and the future we want for all of our children and grandchildren. I think about that every time I see my grandchildren, or every time I see a bright, energetic, impressive young woman like Zianna. Come up here a minute, would you, dear? Please. Can you come stand here with me? I love the dress. Love the dress. You know, God loves us all, right? And we are called to care for and cherish each other. It's not easy. It is not easy. But that is our mission. And that is what we are called to do, not only as Christians, but as Americans, as human beings, to understand and respect each other, to fight for each other's children, each other's dignity, and each other's opportunities as if they were our own. Now, make no mistake, this is not easy work. We've been doing this since Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. But it is righteous work. Protecting all of God's children is America's calling. Remember what Scripture also tells us. Let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. We will not grow weary, and we will not lose heart. We will get up every single day, have faith in one another and in our future, and work toward that better day for all of God's people. Thank you. God bless you.
Well, there you are, Sister Hillary delivering her homily in Charlotte, North Carolina, on Sunday. And now the task falls to you. What is this? What did you hear? And why should you? Why is it that I'm so upset about these things? I am upset about them because I don't know what it is. I don't know what it would take for people to wake up. And if for no other reason than as a leader, of a church, you say, I just will not have my congregation's sacred time be used as a news conference and as an opportunity to kind of proselytize and talk about the things, the lofty things that you have done, and it's all about you. I just won't do that. If you want to come to my church, and it's interesting that it is well-timed, you come to my church in the middle of an uproar in our community, and it makes good footage for you, good coverage. You get a chance to proceed with your campaign. But in my view, it's one of those things that there's some things you've got to have sacred, across the board. There are some things that are sacred. And the worship hour should be just that. People come to church to reconnect with their spiritual selves, to seek some kind of fortification so they could continue the next week. And then you open your church to these vultures that come in. It drives me insane because it says to me that even the pastor of a church doesn't understand that he's encouraging the desecration of his institution. Now, if a candidate wants to come and make a presentation, and by the way, I should mention, after Hillary Clinton made her speech, the pastor himself gets up and says, I need you to register to vote, i.e. for Hillary, and the registration forms are in the back. What kind of snake oil salesmanship is going on here? And if you leave your church, it means that there's nothing at all that's sacred in your community anymore. You are completely invadable. People could just crash land and do with your community and do with your institutions whatever they want to do, because they're getting your approval and assistance to do it. So when I saw that, I just went off the chain, and I still haven't calmed down enough, because there's got to be some kind of a rule, if you will, that in your sacred space, at your sacred hour, and that was the service itself, you don't have anybody coming in there, marching in with all their lies and all their contrivances. And it's as if the whole congregation is assembled, a ready audience for whoever is trudging into your space to talk whatever it is they want to be talking about for their benefit. Anyway, 888-874-4888. The exercise here is, having listened to this speech, what are the telltale signs that Hillary Clinton doesn't mean a thing that she says, and she's a classic, this is a classic neoliberal talking? It is a racist speech. I mean, people would not believe that. It sounded so good. Quoting the Bible and Psalms and whatnot and being very, very holy. The speechwriter did that. But this is to remind people what racism sounds like when coming from a neoliberal. This is how it's smooth, it's gentle, it's packaged well. But it is trenchant racism. Understand it. Jay from Queens, you're on the air.
Hi, Patrice. First,
hi.
I'd like to say, I listened. How you doing, sir? I'm sorry you're upset. And I could see where the violation of the sanctity of one's worship should be respected. But in the black community, or at least the traditional, the black church, we have allowed people to come and give their opinions. Unfortunately, it's being exploited many times by the leader of the church, who is per se pimping from the pulpit for political gain or whatever favors he prefer. But once he even said, you should vote for so-and-so, he threw away his obligation as a nonprofit entity to not endorse candidates. But barring that, I think I wouldn't call it so much as racist. I would say that it was the typical pivoting pandering that most politicians do, and Hillary does so well. But it was done in the feel-good sense, the way Barack Obama has been giving it to us. You know, that it was all of this.
Barack Obama is not exempted from being doing and saying racist things either. Because he is a Clintonite, after all. But here's a question.
He's taking it to another level.
Listening to taking the speech in its totality, was the dead giveaway here that Hillary's speech was in fact racist? What was a dead giveaway?
I can't see it as racist. I see it as the kind of no answer to the question, just posing almost posturing it in, well, you know, you need to respect the law as much as we want to see you grow up and become respectable people.
Right.
And bringing the little child up. And I mean, this was a show. It's a show.
It's a show, but it's a racist show. I know you don't see that. But
I don't know.
I just see it as typical political pandering.
Mm-hmm.
Her mentality is racist. Clearly. And,
well, Hillary said, I'm a Goldwater baby, didn't she? Didn't she say that? I'm a Goldwater baby. She said that. So I don't think things have changed too much for who she is. She is very slick.
All right, let's say you're advising or, you know, you're helping to choreograph this whole thing. You know you're in the heart of a black community. It's called, that AME Zion Church, for crying out loud. You know it's a black church.
Know the church.
All right. Mm-hmm. So you're talking to black people.
Yeah.
Okay. What, therefore, should you be careful not to do?
Well, insult their intelligence, first of all. First of all. But here again, we're in the suspension in a belief. And belief means the absence of doubt, not to question authority. That's the church, right? The tradition of the church, no matter where we find it. Roman Catholic theory, all right?
Yes.
So everybody's in a suspended animation of belief. So what is it she cannot do? You know, we can't believe what she's going to say. And I don't have the words to say that, but I wouldn't call her simply racist. That's too easy. I think it's more indicative.
I get your point. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Yeah.
But I think as we flesh it out a little bit, we'll see how it comes through. It's there, and it is unquestionably racist.
Well,
Patricia from New York,
actions,
you're on the air. Patricia?
Hi, good afternoon, you trees.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you, Yatrice,
I'm sitting here shaking my head. As I'm listening to this, I listen to black people in the back clapping. We don't know, are not able to recognize when we are being preached to, when we are being insulted. You know, this reminds me of Bill in Philadelphia earlier this year as he was pointing his fingers at Black Lives Matter, preaching to them about what they didn't know. You know, by conservative estimates so far, this year, from January to now, over 1,000 black and brown people have been killed at the hands of the police. And for her to talk about, we must think about those police officers who patrol the community and want to keep us safe. Is she out of her mind, and what is wrong with black people?
Well, she starts off from the assumption that they should know that they are in trouble. And more than likely, it's kind of self-inflicted. Because if you followed certain simple rules, you know, you wouldn't have these kinds of things. But what is the first thing this woman says that, and she makes it appear, or she tries to communicate, that she's being very, very sympathetic.
You know, she acts like she is so far removed and disconnected from people going to, from black people going to jail for different types of quantities of drugs. You know, she talks about this in the abstract as if she has no connection to this.
Exactly. This is her husband's
gift to
black America.
You know, the demand that we need to make right now, since the pundits are saying she's going to be the next president, she needs to open the demand that we need to make is that she needs to open the jails and let everybody out who has been affected by this sentencing, by this sentencing law. Let them all out and then pay restitution to them and their families. If you truly believe that this is so inequitable, let them all out and compensate them.
I want to leave this place. Got nowhere to go.
Are you there, Patricia?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. This is what her husband's gift was. But she starts off by telling people, distinguishing herself. Have we lost you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. She starts off by telling the entire congregation how different life is for her grandchildren. They will never, ever experience the stuff that you're going to be experiencing for you, the rest of your life and the rest of their lives, your grandchildren's lives, because my grandchildren are the grandchildren of a president and a former Secretary of State. She says that. They will never have to cope with the challenges that you are coping with that I am lecturing you about today. And she says it very smoothly. My children, and she says, my grandchildren are white. And they are the grandchildren of a former president and a Secretary of State. Now, she means to say that, or she's meaning to convey that her children and her, she herself to a great degree are immune to some of the daily vicissitudes of life that black folks have to contend with. But she slips that in and betrays her own racism right there. Everybody knows if you have a child, well, there's the child of a president and a former Secretary of State. Your grandchildren would be the grandchildren of a former president and a former Secretary of State. I mean, this is not a stretch. But she says it to remind her audience about where their place is. You know, you are not going, I'm not speaking to equals here. I'm going to try my best to sound like it. But I'm real clear that I'm not you. So when she says that, you say, no. My grandchildren are white, and they're the children, grandchildren of a former president and a former Secretary of State, so that they don't have to, I don't envision that they will ever have to deal with the issues that you're dealing with. And people applaud it.
That's, yeah. You know, she and Obama, they say the same thing. Yes, yes, there is inequities, and yes, there is pain. But also understand the pain of the police. Don't come to me and talk about my oppressor's pain. Talk about, if you're coming to talk to me about pain, talk to me about my pain. Don't talk to me about anybody else's pain. Because it's my pain that I'm concerned
about.
And
that's the whole
about.
Point. The entire speech... The entire speech is predicated on pathology, the pathology of black behavior and black life. She does not come there really acknowledging not even her role or her husband's role in creating that pathology.
It's as if they have nothing to do with it. They come with clean hands. They come with
nothing
clean hands.
Nothing to do with it at all. It's amazing. And that's where you see, this is classic neoliberalism.
Oh, God.
She expunged herself from all blame and took on. She took on the attitude and the righteousness to lecture people about what she sees as being important in their lives. She didn't come to talk with them. She came to talk to them.
Talk to them.
Yes, right.
Which is what Bill does. You talk to you.
Yes, right. Oh, in some cases, at you. He just talks at you.
Thank you,
Patricia, for your call today.
Oh, thank you.
I tell you, it's an interesting thing when how people give themselves away. Noel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Patrice, the first thing I wanted to talk about was the contradiction of Hillary. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. The contradiction of Hillary. First of all, she knew where to go because she of course, like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, are against reparations. Correct?
Yes, I would say they are.
Okay, so I mean, if she had any feelings for black people, I would feel that she would feel differently about that.
Well, what do you think from what she said, from what she actually said? What betrayed her true nature and her true feelings?
Well, what I think, like the caller before me was talking about her and her husband having to do with jailing so many black people, also with what's going on in Haiti as well, as far as the Clinton Foundation. If she loved black people so much, as my point is about the jailing, about Haiti, about destroying Libya. She knows where to go to talk her rhetoric. She wouldn't come to Brooklyn. She wouldn't come to other progressive places and do that. Well, maybe she would at maybe Al Sharpton's church or something like that, but she won't come to where people could ask her real questions.
What did you find most offensive in that speech that she gave?
Just the fact that she could come to black churches and spew her rhetoric, in my opinion, and not be challenged by somebody like yourself, myself, or other members of the PRN audience, or other progressive people.
By the way, is this Noel Leader?
No, this is Noel. No.
Okay.
Noel Leader, no.
You sound a lot like Noel Leader, who is one of the driving forces between blacks and law enforcement. Who care?
No. This is not he. I remember you way back in the days of BAI on the 10th floor in your little office there that you used to walk out. So, no, I'm not Noel Leader, but I remember you back from those days. But thank you very much, though.
Thank you. Well, yes, here's ma'am. The thing, and you're right on with it, the idea that she assumes a natural superiority. I'm not coming to talk with you because, number one, the cameras are running. The audience immediately becomes a prop. The church is a prop. The congregation is a prop. The little girl that they're trying to make it look like, it was just, you know, coincidental that she was there. This was arranged. She uses a little child. And she has a child up there knowing that this would be a good photo op. I mean, this is all done in a very planned way. She uses this little black girl who appeared before the council, the local council. It got a lot of coverage because she just broke down in tears. And what she was saying was, I don't think that it is right that we have to suffer this way. And our parents have to suffer this way. It was just heart-wrenching. And there she is right there in the audience. And Hillary just says, oh, could you come up and dance? Oh, what a pretty dress and all this nonsense. But the aim was simply to have the good luck charm. Like back in the old days, they used to have little black children warm their feet, to just lay down on their feet to keep them warm. And it galled me It galled me to see that. And it galled me that this whole congregation, and you have to blame the pastor here, would put all of this at the feet of Hillary Clinton, the whole history of the church, the struggle of the AME Zion Church with racism, the whole movement within the AME Zion Church, the resources of the church, and then you're going to tell people, you should register to vote. The registration forms are in the back, as if we don't understand it to be an endorsement. This is ridiculous. It's got to stop. Thanks a lot, Noel, for your call today. Vincent from New York, what are you thinking? What did you hear in that speech?
I sum it up a little bit like have faith in your demise and don't believe what's before your eyes. It is sickening. And, that is a religious institution. And sometimes you have to deal with those individuals within that house and give them a spiritual spanking. I'll leave it at that.
This has become a custom, apparently, because during election time, you have a lot of people just making the circuit. It's like the Chitlin Circuit for politics. You just go from church to church to church. There is nothing wrong with that, I don't think, if a politician wants to reach out to the church and so forth. But do it as a separate thing, not part of their service, not part of your worship service. Have it interrupted by these predators who come and just start talking their nonsense, interrupting your spiritual time. And it should be done in a manner that is respectful of the institution. You don't come there and tell people, hey, my white grandchildren will never suffer the challenges of life that your black children will suffer. And nobody takes us to task for saying these kinds of things. Wow.
Something else.
Well, thank you for your call. Let's go to California. Harry, you're on the air.
Hello, you three?
Yes, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay.
I know you're doing well. So my impression that she was really talking to a white audience.
Of course. She
knew that address was going to be played on television, on news, and that she was really dressing down the black people to impress the white audience.
You're absolutely correct with that, because this was videotaped, this was filmed, was carried as news. So what she has as at the end of this 20-minute speech, she has a document that A, shows that she's in the heart of the black community, in the heart of the black church community. They received her warmly, so that implies that she is well received throughout the black community. In other words, this church meeting is symbolic of how black America will receive Hillary Clinton. And she is talking frankly. She's talking frankly about race. She's not talking about race at all. She is speaking just exactly what you said. She is indicating to white America the authorities that she naturally has over blacks. You're absolutely right on that.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't come across like that with a hammer, does it? It's very smooth.
It is. It is. And she knew exactly how they would take it, too, because of their lack of self-esteem.
Well, also because black folks are very forgiving, and they're very polite, and they're very, they give you a lot of yardage, let me put it that way. They wouldn't have turned the tables on her right there in the church. They would have considered that to be unseemly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she knew that as well. She knew that. And the pastor was a key, because if he signaled to the congregation his approval of Hillary Clinton, they're not going to you know, voice any disagreement with that.
No, no. Well, but, I'll let you get on to the other callers.
Thank you so much for your call today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good day. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Veronica. How are you?
Oh, beloved, you know, Stokely Carmichael and Adam Clayton Powell came to mind. And I'm sitting here just stewing. I said, my goodness. It comes like her saying, she has watermelon, or is it hot sauce in her bag? All these things just kept coming. And you know, it was like a right hook, a left hook. And I said, oh, my goodness. It's like we just crawling on that plantation. And I was thinking of the 501(c)(3). I said, you know, they have a lease that they will speak at any church, at any time nowadays. That's why they're putting people in these positions of power and doing the things that they did. You know, get your old buddy Loretta Lynch in. Get your old buddy, you know, this one's not playing ball right. And with all that's being said, I still remember Ron Brown, you know, getting a bullet to the back of his head. If you don't play ball, you're going to do it this way or the highway. But with all these ugly things, there are more righteous people, more people with integrity than all these devils. It's just so insulting. I could think of 100 ways that she insulted us with every word that she spoke. And then half of it was Bernie Sanders' speech. You know, it's just so sickening. I want to put my boots on, as we say in the military, because the sugar honey iced tea is getting so deep.
I tell you. And she has done this, of course, at many churches. As I call it, the Chitlin' Circuit for the churches, you know. The Chitlin' Circuit used to be the way black entertainers used to work their own circuit in the years of segregation, where they couldn't perform in other places. But here, they make the rounds, and they come with messages that are so insulting, and they are permitted to get away with it because the pastors are in their pockets. Plain and simple. Thanks, Veronica, for your call. Thank you for participating today. Let's go to Philadelphia. Claire from Philadelphia, you're on the air.
Hello, Beatrice. Hello. Everyone else. I hope you're well. I wanted to say my focus is on the behavior of the congregation. I wonder how many people stood up and walked out.
Apparently not many, because it was not reported that anybody walked out.
And why not? You know, when I was a kid, and I was talking with my father about the possibility of my dating, I remember only one thing he said, I mean, more than anything else. He said, Clara, remember this, you teach other people how to treat you. Now we're talking about boys, but I'm telling you, that's about everybody else, too. And that's what's going on here. We teach people how to treat us badly. And we got to look at that. Change that. We can't change Hillary Clinton. She's been doing this all along, and we've been taking it, voting for her, voting for Obama the second time. I voted for him the first time. Voting for this and voting for that. I want to focus on us. That's the only way we're going to survive, is look at our behavior. The other thing is, this relates to something I've been talking about from my childhood. When I was a young teenager, I guess it was the late 50s, Hattie McDaniels had a, she was the actress in Gone with the Wind, who played the major slave. Anyway, Hattie McDaniels had a, before she had her TV show, she had a radio show. And the only thing I remember, except that she was a maid and was demeaning, and my ideas then, stores with her theme song, because I react to it every time. It went like this. Got the world in a jug, boss. Got the stopper in my hand. And I would listen to that and say, what? That's so stupid. What is this? Anyway, now I understand it, of course, better. It was a way of saying, this is the way black people are, white America. Take advantage of it. This is, we got their number.
Well, I couldn't imagine that at this point in the election campaign, and it's pretty late because she's done this, she's toured all these churches and been given access to all these churches.
Yeah.
And the message is routinely just riddled with all these racist undertones, and she's never been called on it. So, this weekend, I just had it.
You got to look at that. You treat not her, us.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you so much. Ali from New York, you're on the air. Ali, are you there? Okay. Cece from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Yatrice. Again, I must say that you are loved, liked, loved, appreciated, and much smarter for your show, for sure.
Thank you.
And
how are you reacting to the speech?
Well, here's the thing. I think about that. You know, I wasn't going to call because I wanted to hear, you know, the creative expression of all the listeners. I have a background. My father was in real estate, and when he was in Howard, he tutored. He learned five languages, and he was tutored. That's how he earned his money until the Depression. And so, I have a sales background from my dad, and so forth and so on. And my second son has it as well. So we look for the good. We look for the opportunity to make the sale. And so, in listening, and the CC is going to stand for creative contrast right now. And that is, yes, like Clara said, we're not going to change Hillary. We're not going to change the system. She was doing what the Donald was doing when he was talking about the black situation, speaking to the whites. Sunday is the ideal situation to get people in. And I understand. I agree with, you know, the sacredness of Sunday. What we have to do is stay diligent to make, I'm going to say Hillary for me, make Hillary and her administration hold the task, not do what we did with President Obama. And we just kind of wait and see what he was going to do, and we got to find out, you know, and I appreciate him very much, but I feel that we have got to inspect what we expect. It's going to take action, and I'm looking for the good news here. The good news here is that she went. She said things that people like yourself and the lead story listeners understand very well, but the majority of the people do not, and they need this kind of reminding. They need this kind of, you know, consoling and so forth and so on, like the president going to, you know, the shooting, you know, there. So I personally think, okay, now we have to do is if she gets in, then we've got to call her out on Haiti, call her out on all these things, and keep the movement going. That's the good news for me. Are there issues in her presentation or going? Absolutely, no question. But what's the good news? I can work with the good news, and that's what those that want to work, those that know we, and I don't really want to work, honestly. I know I have to. I know this is the time.
Well, okay. I'm not waiting. I think she is rotten to the core.
And
I refuse to be insulted by people who come in my house, and I'm using the church as an extension of my house, to come in my house and insult me. You're not going to get away with it. And we are supposed to, we are not really doing the job of punishment. We are very, very reluctant to punish people for doing the wrong thing by us. And we have to change that attitude. There ought to be very swift and certain punishment. And when somebody comes in your house, in your holy house, not to over-exaggerate, but this is your church, And by symbolically, it's everybody's church. It's everybody's house. And starts doing this kind of stuff and walks away and, you know, with applause and gets all these different pieces of the work done. You indicate that you're in charge. You indicate that black people also have a pathology that can't necessarily be solved right away. You indicate that you have no regard. You have absolutely no regard for the diplomacy. She was the top diplomat. This did not sound like a diplomat to me. It sounded like a basic person, an unguarded racist moment. Thanks, CC, for your call. Now, that brings us to the end of our program today. I'll take a breather afterwards and get myself centered, and we'll meet again tomorrow. But today, I just had to get this off my chest. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Always, always a pleasure and a great privilege. I mean that, to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Things could be better than they seem. Oh, I just need another dream. Whoa, I need another dream.